Moncrief on News Talk.
What is this?
It's R&D.
You redid everything.
Yeah, well, I subtracted and I pushed.
Okay, you want to spell out for me what exactly you subtracted and what exactly you pushed?
Sid, we're going to get a star. What?
I thought that was a trap.
I thought we were going to be dialed.
Okay.
Your cook was excellent, by the way.
Thank you for saying that. But you still changed all my shit.
It's our shit, and it's just some adjusting of the plating. The scallop is perfect. We don't need the six other fishes. The ribeye was too big. This is a cleaner plate. And then instead of the bucatini, we're going to do a large raviolo.
Yolk inside?
Yolk inside. And pinch out of dust. And, I put potato chips on the sea bass.
Balloonade.
Yeah. Yes. And we're going to ditch the cavatelli.
Better for service.
Right. I'm going to change it every day.
The cavatelli or the raviolo?
Everything.
We're going to change everything every day.
That's The Bear. You can stream all of season 3 now on Disney Plus. James Dempsey joins us once again. Much anticipated, of course. Is it getting more of a, well, not a lukewarm reception from critics, but maybe not as excited as in previous series?
This season has been definitely the most critically not acclaimed, shall we say. I even read one article that was like, finally we can admit it, The Bear is a bad TV show. And I was just like, this is clickbait headline if ever there was one. Because it is definitely not a bad TV show. What I would say is, by the time we've reached season 3, it's perhaps not as fresh as it was because it is following the same kind of pattern. But I have to admit, I really, really enjoyed it nonetheless. And what I sort of took from it this time was, again, something different, right? So the first season was kind of a bit of a surprise hit in the US when it debuted about 2 years ago. And it took a very long time to actually to make it to our shores. I mean, it was 8 or 9 months after it had finished pretty much by the time it came to Disney Plus here. And then the second season was this really brilliant, like, difficult second album, right? Where, like, not only did it move things on a lot in terms of plot, it also made this very kind of brave narrative choice of sidelining Carmi, the main character, Jeremy Allen White, I guess, so he could do some press-ups for his Calvin Klein.
Yes, probably, yeah.
Campaign, right? And featuring much more of the kind of supporting characters in a very, very interesting way. And then all coming to end with, of course, this brilliant bottle episode about Christmas dinner in the household with basically every famous person you've ever seen in your life in it. And then ending with this kind of big finale episode, right? And this third season brings Carmi much more back into the fold.
Yeah.
I read him being described here as kind of the emotional antagonist to the series, and how his very rigid and driven focus and ambition in the kitchen is driving the season. And often when I am like reviewing shows like this, right, particularly like with House of the Dragon recently, such a long time might go between the end of one season to the start of another one that I will go onto YouTube and I will like go recap, please, of whatever happened so that I have like a fresh-ish memory. And, you know, I had to marvel at how the first episode of this is like basically the poshest, fanciest
recap
you have ever
but
seen.
But it was beautifully done.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And while I'm watching it, like, it's a bit kind of like when you're going for a fine dining meal, right? Like, as in they present the plate in front of you and it is stunning and small and self-contained. But like, it's so edited well. And that is what the show is. Like, I really think the unsung heroes of the entire The Bear production are whoever does the editing.
Yeah.
Because the way the, the long takes are shot and cut between characters, the way they style the food, the way they do everything. I mean, that first episode is almost dialogue free. Yeah. Not entirely, right? But like, as in, it's not moving the plot along at all. But it is this kind of 30-minute long fever dream-esque revisionist fantasy of Carmi's route from the beef sandwich shop through various kitchens, etc.
Well, which brings me on to, like, because the clip we played there is episode 2, and that's kind of like the inciting incident, as you said, for the rest of the series. We've seen episode 1, which reminds us how damaged Carmi is from having worked in these fine dining restaurants. And then in episode 2, he wants to go back to that life. There's no real explanation as to why that is.
beyond his own ambition, I guess, really, was what I took from it. And yes, like, I think what I would take from this is Christopher Storer, who is the guy who wrote, who created the show and wrote and directed many of the episodes. He has envisioned this as like a multi-series arc. My understanding is that they've already filmed the fourth series already, and that is basically in the can, ready to go whenever they want to release it. And we're at this kind of like, you know, mid stage of the tasting menu, right? Where we're only going to move the plot along so far in this particular course of the bear, right? If I can keep using these labored food metaphors. And certainly, I think that is a fair criticism to say that, like, Carmi is now, because he's, despite being so fluent, fluent in F words, right? Like, he actually doesn't say that much.
No.
Right?
And that second episode is just an argument.
Yeah.
It's basically, I want to get another, what? No, F you, F you, F you. If you took out all the F U's, it would have been a 10-minute episode, actually.
Right. Like, yeah, I read there's more than 1,000 F words in of some iteration across the whole 24 episodes of the thing. Yeah, like, for me, it's the package. And what I actually really appreciated here was that when I was watching the second season, even though I absolutely loved it, right? Like, and it's brilliant. What I kind of was narratively questioning how all of the kind of like side cooks and, my chefing terminology here is going to be pretty poor. But like, I always kind of questioned how the greasy spoon workers in the sandwich shop would suddenly overnight turn into culinary experts.
Yes.
So like whatever about their skills, even having the interest to do so. And, you know, I don't know what this says about me and masochism, but I sort of liked how they were suffering or how they were struggling in this third season, that they had like bought into the dream in the second season. And then the reality of the dream is actually not everything that was promised. Right.
Yeah,
And you see like, you see in this kind of like third episode where they're trying to change the menu literally every single day, how grueling and painful and difficult and arduous a process that could possibly be.
What an insane idea it is, really. Right?
So I liked the kind of graft of it. And also, this is like a show that clearly is able to attract incredible talent because they have brilliant actors in the smallest possible roles, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you know, Olivia Colman was something of a surprise kind of cameo, well, not cameo, but a guest star in the second season and has again a very small role in this third one, but very effective at it. And just how, you know, just the sheer star wattage of people who clearly want to be in this show because they clearly admire it so thoroughly. It means that it's always going to be a bit of a talking point, even if some people think the season is so-so, of which I wouldn't say I am. I liked it. Didn't absolutely love it in the way that I would have, you know, feverishly.
Well, funny enough, the second season was stronger slightly because Carmi wasn't central to it.
Yeah.
But it was it gave all the other characters, you know, a bit more depth and it was a lot more affecting that
Agreed.
Way.
Yeah, I agreed. Yeah. But I think we're going to get kind of two-handers throughout this whole, or like, you know, kind of one for us, one for them, one for us, one for them.
Yes.
Like, certainly Sydney Ayo Edebiri gets a bit sidelined in this.
Oh.
And I would hope that we get more of her in season four.
Yeah. Okay. One person says, it seems that maintaining 5-star reviews for a drama about a Michelin star restaurant is as difficult as maintaining a Michelin star restaurant. By the way, I'm twirling the corner of my moustache as I tie this. Good for you. Watched the first episode of season 3 of The Bear last night. The whole episode felt like it could have been fit into a 3-minute montage. Loads of arty long shots just for the sake of it. I did read one review where the person said that they almost did it deliberately for people who'd heard about The Bear. Mm. But this was like, no, go away. This is for, you know, your diehard fans. That's fair too. Actually, I thought it was great. But maybe that's because I was a diehard fan. Our next show is Clarkson's Farm. You can stream season 3 now on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
I've got something serious to say to you. I've made a big decision. You are no longer the tractor driver on this farm.
Why am I then?
I've decided I'm going to make you farm manager.
Really?
Yep. I want you to run the farming side of it.
You're fired.
What?
You're fired.
You can fire. I'm the boss.
I'm the farm manager. You're fired.
I'm not fired.
You are.
I'm not, because you haven't heard how this is going to work.
Tell me that, then you're fired.
Here's how I want it to work. I've got to concentrate this year on making money out of that bit of the farm, which isn't farmed.
Yes.
I mean, you've never even been here.
No.
And then that means I'm not going to have the time to really concentrate on this bit of the farm.
On the arable, yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the arable. And I'm going to concentrate on this.
Yeah. Okay, so he's making that guy in charge of the farming side of the farm. Is there like a lap dancing club on another piece of land or something? How does that work?
Well, I'm sure the council will shut it down as they do to everything on his farm as well, right? But yeah, so this is Clarkson's Farm. And I have to admit, I'm a late comer to Clarkson's Farm because it is in its third iteration on Amazon Prime. Mm. And I pretty much only started it, you know, last Thursday, right? And I guess I was put off a little bit by Clarkson, because ultimately I know he's funny, I know he's gregarious and he's wry, but he's a bit of a Tory. Do you know what I mean? There's just something about him that is just like, ugh, that guy again. I didn't love Top Gear as much as many other people did. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't like the Grand Tour that much. And I went in expecting not really to like this, and it totally won me over, right?
Okay.
Like, I have to hand it to it. Now, it is exactly what you expect it is going to be, right? It is Jeremy Clarkson, you know, doing his kind of Curb Your Enthusiasm on a farm, right? Where everything kind of goes wrong, right? He is he has bought this 400 hectare farm in Oxfordshire in 2008. And at the beginning of the season, which is or the series just before the pandemic, the farm manager has retired and he has decided, as he says, for no good reason, to sort of take over running the farm. And I would say the probably good reason was the millions of pounds Amazon paid him to, you know, produce the show,
yeah,
right? But into that comes Jeremy as this confident but ignorant amateur farmer trying to navigate, you know, Great British agriculture, shall we say, right? And every episode is given some sort of gerund title. So we have like tractoring or porking or pandemicking, etc., right? And it's all about life on the farm. And Jeremy was speaking there with Caleb Cooper, who is this farmhand who, my understanding, was actually originally already working on the farm, but who has been discovered as, shall we say, TV gold because he's a bit bumbling and he is not afraid to contradict Jeremy and they create good conflict. And they, in this third series, they divide the farm essentially in half, with Caleb running the agrarian side and Jeremy trying to do whatever else he can do. So, for instance, in the first episode, he is making jam by foraging berries. But then, you know, and all of that is kind of charming and interesting.
Yeah.
But where the show is actually at its most, you know, where it has the greatest depth is where they haven't planned for things to go awry, right? I mean, Jeremy's brand is, you know, I'm going to be very contrarian about something I don't know about, right? So you can see all of those things coming a mile away. And he even has this affect in the way he speaks where, you know, he's kind of like doing this performance bit that they've all agreed that we're doing. But it's where the real heart comes through that I found the show most interesting. So when he buys the pigs, for instance, right? He and his partner, Lisa Hogan from Dublin, I believe, they really take the pigs into their heart. And when the sows, or there's another term for pigs that, anyway, it doesn't matter, right? When the female pigs are delivering their piglets, you know, they are so charmed by this, they find the piglets so cute, and they are unbelievably cute. But then when several of the piglets die, you really see how affected Jeremy and Lisa are by this, and that this is not something that the, you know, production planned. Well, I really hope it is. And I found their kind of humane and completely concerned reactions to these to be very, very honest. And then the other thing, I don't know why I'm so fascinated by this, but, like, you know, I'm not a farmer. My father was an agronomist, so, like, I would have heard talk of all of this kind of stuff as a child, but, like, I had absolutely no interest in it because I was sitting in front of a television. And just the sheer scale of, like, farming equipment. I just find so utterly fascinating. Like, every time there's a job to do, there seems to be some attachment they can put on the back of his massive 10-ton Lamborghini tractor that will do something like laying pipes or foraging berries or whatever. They're just... It just, like, I find it, you know, I guess I don't know that much about agriculture, and yet seeing how fully advanced and wide, you know, I can't explain this well, how much thought has gone into the things I pick up in the supermarket without me ever even thinking about it.
Yes.
Has been just
okay.
Really, really revelatory to me.
Yeah. But is it credible, or does it feel credible, that this is an actual farm? And if that Amazon weren't giving him money, he would have just built a load of bungalows on it.
Well, look, I mean, it's definitely been very well received by British farmers.
It has, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. That they have championed the series, saying that this is a very honest reflection of life on the farm. Now, whether or not other farms make as little profit as Jeremy Clarkson seems to be making from the purely farming business side of this production, I don't know how they would keep going, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's probably a case to be made for how difficult life is on a farm in general, and how it is often going season to season, and the expenses come in and you have to hope for the best, right?
Yeah.
So certainly it is a show about a very, you know, it is a show about a wealthy man dipping his fingers into a financially precarious industry. But I think it is a warts and all reflection of that industry.
Yeah. Thank you for covering Clarkson's Farm. It's the only show that really highlights the red tape in farming today. And someone else says Clarkson's Farm is fantastic. It's fun to watch with an important message. The other people in the show are fantastic too, particularly Gerald and his voice. Like him or hate him, he knows how to carry a show. Right, we'll move on to our third show of the day. It is Under the Bridge. You can stream the entire series now on Disney+. Here's a clip.
Calling for days and nobody's getting back to us. My niece Rena called us from the bus stop by Shoreline and said she was coming home on Friday, and then nothing.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. My teenagers lie.
I know Rena was over at Seven Oaks that day, and my sister found this in her room, and it belongs to one of those girls.
She was also speaking to a boy on the phone that night. I think I heard his name was Connor.
Okay, hang on. Why was your daughter hanging around a foster home? Was there trouble in the family?
Could you translate?
But she speaks English just fine. You know, I get it from him. I wouldn't expect it from you.
Right.
What does that mean?
Forget it. I can't believe I actually thought you guys would help.
And if you want our help, it'd be a good idea not to mouth off to us.
Mouth off? Oh, I'm sorry. My niece is missing and no one gives a damn about it.
Right, that's based on this is based on a true story,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's based on like a very well known and considered at the time something of a moral panic case in Canada, where this young teenage girl named Rena Virk was murdered under the bridge. That's where the title comes from, and it is a true crime drama that also involves a late writer. So her name was Rebecca Godfrey. She kind of had this kind of hit in the 90s and then had left Canada and was living in New York, and then was going through a difficult time creatively, and went back to Vancouver, or British Columbia, I should say, rather, to kind of rehash or re-find herself, and just stumbled upon this mystery and was writing a novel about this, you know, about these girls when this case happened, just as things happen, and then created her own novel or true crime, I guess, novel about this thing called Also Under the Bridge. And she's played by Riley Keough, Elvis's granddaughter, as she will always be known. And then the police officer we heard in that is played by Lily Gladstone, who was recently Oscar nominated. And it is a very intriguing case, but less so. It's kind of an awkward watch because it sort of saps some of the real vital and really interesting stuff away, right? So you have this cohort of girls growing up in a kind of foster care system who are bullying this Indian-Canadian girl, Rena, who really just wants to be their friend and is doing anything she can to break into their kind of club. And then that whole story is absolutely fascinating. And I will say the young performers there are really brilliant and really chilling in the kind of mob mentality that they have. And like, if I was sending my daughter to secondary school, I'd be watching this with great concern. Right. But into that also comes then the adults. And that bit is sort of less interesting. Right. Mm. So we have, like, you know, as I said, Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone as... Lily Gladstone plays the local police officer who wants to leave the small island and go to Vancouver and be transferred there, and sees this case as a potential way to make her name. While you have Riley Keough as the writer Rebecca Godfrey, who is trying to write about these girls and finding unlocking the mystery with that itself. And we have their personal conflict and sort of their backstories all fleshed out, when actually the story of the murder in and of itself is the nuts and bolts of the whole thing.
Yes.
And fascinating enough in and of itself not to need, you know, these kind of side plots that make it add on for another four episodes maybe that it didn't need to, right? But it's a well-made, well-crafted, particularly well-acted crime drama. And I guess the kind of the true crime aspect of it makes it particularly tragic to watch.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Those three shows are Under the Bridge. You can stream the entire series now on Disney Plus. Clarkson's Farm. You can stream season 3 now on Amazon Prime Video. And The Bear. You can stream all of season 3 now on Disney Plus. James Empey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.